and gentlemen, this is Bruce Buffer, and you're listening to the main event of podcasts. First, fighting out of the blue corner, Red Gilmore. And now, it's time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Been talking about a special guest that we're going to have on today, and I'm really excited to talk to this guy, a guy with an amazing journey that a handful of people in this entire planet have been able to live and be able to accomplish and say that they have accomplished. And I'm really excited to have him on. He's got a great new book out right now called Best Seat in the House. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can go to justinrobertsbook.com for more information about that on how you can order it. But right now on the line with me, I got Justin Roberts. Justin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great, man. You know, you have such an interesting journey in just life in general, and like what got you to the WWE and to live out, you know, the dream of so many. And, you know, I read your book, and, you know, I will say this, you know, I work with Booker T, and, you know, his first book wasn't super long, right? It was like, you know, 150, 175 pages, maybe something like that. And I got through it pretty quickly. I ordered your book on Amazon, and I remember we talked through a DM, and you said, you know, people are actually going through it pretty quickly. So I'm thinking it's not going to be the biggest book in the world. And then when it ships to my house and I open it, I'm like, oh, wow, this guy wrote like the New Testament of story right here. I mean, it was very, but in a great way, like in the best way possible. It was very, you know, man, there's so much great story there. And then I'm like, man, this actually might take me a little bit longer to read, but it didn't. It was one of the best books I've read here about wrestling in a very long time. And it was a page turner. How long did it take you to write this book?
It was about 3 years. Kind of started writing it and then sat on it for a while. And then when I wasn't with the company anymore, got back into writing. And then after I had a lot written, there's just so much content. And it's hard sometimes to organize something like that, especially since I've never done it before. I'm not a writer by any means, so I didn't know exactly the right way to do it. So I sat on it for about a year as well. So after that, I was fresh and ready to jump back in again, and that's when it started coming together. And then got back in and moved some things around, added some things, took some things out, and went through it again, another edit, went through it again, another edit, went through it again. To the point where we went to print late, and my editor was on vacation, and it's my fault because I wanted it to be perfect as far as the content from my end before it went out. And so by the time I got it, the editor was away, and they had to go to print.
Oh man! So it was definitely a process, is what you're saying. Probably more than you expected.
The whole book process is a book in itself. It really is. Just everything that went into it, and as far as finding a publisher and finding an agent and all of that, that is a book in itself. And it was not easy. You know, there's a lot of people out there who want to publish books, and I can tell you it is not easy. Even if you have a following, if you have a cool story, it's hard, especially if you want to write the truth and you want it to be completely honest, and not everybody will support you. So it was a long, long process.
And, you know, you talk about telling the truth and being honest. And I think, in an age where, you know, you watch CNN or Fox News and they're programming for a certain side, right? I feel like your book was one of the more balanced accounts of an honest, real journey and real career in professional wrestling, with its highs of high, you know, the highest of highs and, you know, some tough times as well. How important was it for you to keep that balance and walk the tightrope and not come off like, you know, a guy? And, you know, I'm sure we've both read the books of the guys who were there and they're a little bit bitter about it. Was it difficult to not come off as bitter, or was it difficult to not want to bury certain things?
Anytime you're honest and you're not there anymore, you could be painted as bitter. well that I was ready to be done. That it, there's no part of me that says, I wish I was there or I should be there. There's nothing like that. So it's just, hey, I had a cool journey. There were ups, there were downs, but I had a cool journey. Let me tell you about it, honestly. And this is what happened. So it's not, I'm not trying to get anything done. You know, I'm not trying to get my job back. I'm not trying to do anything. Like, I just want to tell the story. So in doing so, I'll give credit where it's due, but I'll also, you know, tell it like it is on certain things that maybe other people would want to talk about who have hopes to go back. And most people do want to go back, so it's very common.
Well, you know, it's funny. So I get the book in the mail, and, you know, I was really excited to read it because, you know, I got my start in the business and in really entertainment when I was 18 years old with Booker T as the ring announcer for his product. And never doing ring announcing before, put out there, you know, for the first time live. And, you know, it's definitely it's an experience as a ring announcer that I don't think a lot of people understand. Like, there's somewhat of a it's a real rush. You know, it's really fun when you're out there. So I was excited to read this book, and I start going through the first few pages, and I'm wondering how much I'm going to relate right to the story of a fan who goes into ring announcing, doesn't go the path of other people when they. You know, they want to be a wrestler. I wanted to, you know, how much I was going to relate, you know, going into being a ring announcer. So I'm reading through the first couple pages, and one of my favorite childhood movies is Home Alone. And you're talking about hanging out with Macaulay Culkin. And I just got to know, as a longtime Home Alone fan up until 4 and 5, right? How was it hanging out with Macaulay Culkin in the heyday of Macaulay Culkin?
It was cool. You know, you see it differently when you're an adult. Like now when you talk about meeting Macaulay, like, you know, I've seen him around at WrestleManias. And, you know, nice guy, always been a nice guy. But when you're a kid, when you're, you know, 12-ish years old and you're hanging out with the star of Home Alone, it's just, I don't know what I expected, but he was cool. He was really cool. He was down to earth. We talked wrestling together, and he was just a really nice kid.
You think that super early experience of being around celebrity, you know, because a lot of the times you don't want to come off in the business, and I know we'll get into this, but you don't want to come off as too much of a super fan. There's like a stigma attached to it. Do you think that early brush with celebrity and kind of seeing what that life was like, do you think that kind of gave you a sense of how to conduct yourself whenever you kind of started schmoozing with the Hollywood celebrities and with some of the top superstars? Did that help you at all?
Yeah, you definitely learn with every experience. I mean, every experience is a learning experience. So you keep that in the back of your mind. At 12 years old, I wasn't like, oh, well, the next time I meet someone, I should, you know, try to do this. Yeah, I was just a total fan. There was no, like, sense to me, like, oh, maybe I should be more professional because, you know, I was a kid. So as time went on, I think it was really the independents working independent shows with guys who had been to WWF and WCW, working with them, and just that's where I became more of a professional. And I still never hid the fan in me. I mean, anytime I worked with those guys, I would still, like, tell stories from when I was a kid and ask questions. And even when they were my bosses, when Mike Rotunda was my boss, and I would call him Irwin or IRS. it's still real to me. So, you know, Ted DiBiase was my boss. I called him Million Dollar Man. Like, it was awesome. It was these guys that were heroes to me growing up are now my bosses, and I would talk wrestling. So I was professional. They didn't look at me as like, oh, there's that annoying fan who happens to work here. It's Justin, but he's got a love for the business, and he's a fan. And I never hid that. I was always open about being a fan. I was always posting pictures on Twitter and my social media just being a fan. Hey, cool, Hulk Hogan's back, and, you know, taking a picture with Hulk and The Rock. And, you know, I always did that because I am a fan. And I think it's very, very apparent in the book that when I say fan, I don't mean just in wrestling. Like, I come off as a fan, and any celebrity that I talk about, like, I'm still a fan while I'm meeting them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to maintain that fandom of certain things. It's really what sometimes drives you to be so good, especially with you. I mean, if you weren't such a fan, you wouldn't have that drive in you to be one of the best. And, you know, I'm not just saying this. Like, your ring announcing was so good. It was so perfect for the WWE and for wrestling, because people don't understand that ring announcing is actually not an easy job. I know there's the stigma that anybody can get up there and say who's coming up next, but there's your tenor, your tone, your cadence. How am I going to say this name? What syllable, what vowel am I going to elongate here? What really?
Not even that, just the content, too. A lot of times I didn't have a script when we all went live on the air, and I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't have communication. I was the last person they were going to give any messages to as far as what was going on. So I was left out there a lot of Monday nights to sink or swim. So I just had to roll with the punches. And a lot of those long announcements, you know, everything had to be memorized. I didn't have any notes with me up there. I didn't have any communication in my ear from the bosses. So I was really on my own to guess what was going on. So it was a very challenging position, not as hard as being a wrestler, of course, but it seems easy. You go in there, you make a few announcements, but there's an art to it. You could just go in and make a few announcements and omit information, or you could go in there and really grasp the art of it and get everything out in an announcement that should be there, the type of match, the rules, the weights, the hometowns, the championship, the challenger. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to throw in. Or you could go in and you could wing it and leave out some of that information and just get the job done. But as time went on, I went from being a self-trained ring announcer, just went up there and did it because that was the easiest way to get in. So I thought, you know, I went in and over time I would watch my tapes and say, okay, well, I don't like the way I'm doing this, so I'm not going to do that again, and just get better, just learn from the mistakes that I made and try to get better for every show.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's like I said, though, I mean, yeah, with the announcements and going up there with no script, that's got to be, you're out there without a net, right? I mean, you're walking the tightrope without a net on live television in front of millions of people. But the thing was, is you always came off. Well, and here's the thing that a lot of people don't know. So I've seen the shows. I've been back there with Book or whatnot. I've seen them working on scripts up until, you know, here 7 o'clock Central when Raw goes live here, and they're still changing things. So to be able to bob and weave with the changes that are always being made, and then to be able to memorize that, I mean, it's really a super skill that I think that's only why a handful of people have been able to do it and make a run out of it in the company. And, you know, when you think of with you and maybe Tony Chimmel, Howard Finkel, of course, Lillian Garcia, like, you have to master the art, and it is a really difficult task. Now, I will say, when I started out ring announcing, a lot of the, you know, especially on the shows that weren't televised, the boys in the locker room, they sometimes like to play around with the announcer. They like to play jokes on the announcer. So when I was new there, at Reality Wrestling with Booker, a lot of the guys, they'd give me their wrong hometowns. They'd tell me the wrong guy's coming out first. They'd come out to the wrong music. Did that ever happen to you at the house shows?
I mean, we had fun at the house shows. We definitely had fun. Especially before camera phones were out, we would mess around all the time. Like, in a way where only we knew that we were messing around. It wasn't anything that ruined the show, or most fans probably didn't pick up on what we were doing. But we had fun, which I tell a lot of those stories in the book, just little things that we did at ringside. And yeah, we all had fun.
No, I mean, and it's a fun atmosphere. You know, I always took it as, you know, you're the ring announcer, you're the new guy, you're kind of getting, you know, they're teasing you, they're ribbing you a little bit, maybe a little bit of hazing, and which is actually something that's come up recently. And I wanted to ask you, in the culture of pro wrestling, and you address this in your book in detail, a couple accounts, in the culture of pro wrestling, there's ribs, right? There's a little bit of hazing, to find out, you know, if you pass the smell test, quote unquote. How much of that is harmless, you know, let's see if the new guy can make it, and how much of it really is bullying? Because there's the Mauro Ranallo thing with JBL that's going on, and I know you've been involved in that. A lot of the websites have been talking about that. A lot of your interviews, you've talked about that. Do you think that there's a difference between ribbing and hazing and the bullying?
Oh, there's definitely a difference. I mean, ribbing is fun. Hazing might be something harmless that's short-term, and then you kind of prove yourself and it goes away. You know, I don't know Moro's situation because I don't know Moro, and I wasn't around for that. I can only talk from my experiences, which, you know, I thought about in the book, and what happened to me wasn't something that was in good fun. It wasn't something like, hey, let's see if you could take it for a little bit, and then we'll let up once he does, because I kept taking it, and it kept continuing. And, you know, I put up with a lot of stuff, and fortunately, over time, a lot of guys left, and a lot of different guys came in, different mentality, and that stuff wasn't as prevalent, but still there were things that would go on that were different forms of bullying, and it came from higher up, from, you know, even though guys were gone, it was still going on because the higher ups were involved, and it was just something that they encouraged. So there's definitely a difference. So, I mean, there's a lot of awful stuff that went on that's bullying, and then there was fun stuff that went on that was just ribbing. So, yeah, there was a little bit of everything.
You know, I heard you say in a couple of interviews, and it does come across in the book too, but you say now that you you wrote the book and it's out there, and the stories that you tell, you just hope that it invokes some change, some positive change in the business. In your opinion, and a guy who's there for over a decade, what could be the biggest change to help the environment backstage and to help the product overall?
I mean, it's the whole mentality there, and I always say, like, I'm not going after the company. I'm not, you know, trying to see them fail. It's like, I want them to succeed. I want wrestling to be around. I just want wrestling to be great. And a lot of times, the storylines they give us, the characters they push, like, guys start getting over and they cut them off. And then there's other guys who aren't getting over who they want to get over, and they just keep shoving them down our throats as the viewers. And it's like, instead of giving the audience what the audience wants, they're giving them what they want. It's like they book for ego versus booking for business and for, you know, money. So I wish that would change as far as the bullying. There's a lot of bullying that goes on, and I don't know if it'll ever change, but my hope is now that there's some attention brought to it. The mentality is, if you don't like it, leave. We can do whatever we want. We can get away with it because where are you going to go? And that's why everybody just stays in line and keeps their mouth shut and takes their paycheck and takes it. So I'm just hoping that even though there's no alternative for people to leave there and go to like a WCW, I'm just hoping that everybody being aware of what's going on, maybe they'll say, all right, maybe we should knock this out.
I think that would be a positive change. Now, the book is called Best Seat in the House, JustinRobertsBook.com. I can't recommend it enough. You will breeze right through this book. I think the audio book is available this week sometime. Two more things real quick, Justin, before we let you go. First off, just two quick questions. One, if you had to pick, and I know it's so difficult, who was your favorite superstar to announce to the ring?
The Undertaker. The Undertaker was on TV when I first started watching, and then his entrance was always just special. You know, it was just a very different entrance, and I was always a fan of him, of his entrance, and then later on to be a part of that, and I'm probably best known. That's one of the introductions I'm best known for. So to be a small part of that entrance was really cool. So that was definitely my favorite to announce.
Now, also early on in the book, there's another thing I resonated with. You said you had a love for like the older TV shows or the TV shows, sitcoms like the Golden Girls, right? You were a fan of the Golden Girls? You love the Golden Girls. Now, that's my final question before you leave. Who's your favorite Golden Girl and why?
Okay, so I get this all the time, and I hate picking favorites, especially when it comes to the Golden Girls. I could tell you, oh, man. It's tough. This is really a difficult question. I've been doing a lot of interviews lately, and this might be the hardest question that I've gotten. I mean,
it's a tough one. You
Sophia is one of my favorites. Sophia, for sure, is one of my favorites. But I also love Dorothy, and I also love Rose. So I don't know. I just feel like it's a giant tie between the three of them.
Mm. So no love for Blanche Devereaux. I'm a little disappointed.
I like Blanche, but that means she's like my second favorite, and then my first favorite is a three-way tie.
Well, there you go. Okay, I gotta like it, but I would have to go with Michelle Getty.
Who's your favorite?
Sophia. Okay. Sophia, hands down. You gotta love the elder statesman. She's the OG of the Golden Girls. You know, without her,
I love all of them. I got to meet two out of four of them.
Who'd you meet?
I thought you read the book, brother.
Yeah, well, I know. Tell those fans who you met.
I'm kidding. I met Bea Arthur years ago, and she was alive, and she was awesome. And then I met Rose, Betty White, when she hosted Monday Night Raw, and it was awesome. Both of them were great. I was worried about meeting both of them. I didn't know what to expect, and they were great. Love both.
You know, the classic Hollywood type, like the Betty White, is still on my bucket list of people I have to meet. What an incredible career, an incredible woman.
So sweet. Yeah.
Oh, I can only imagine.
A sweet woman. Exactly what you'd expect.
I can only imagine. But the book is called Bessie in the House. I've read it. Y'all need to read it. The audiobook, though, is something, you know, it's weird. I've found myself reading a book and then listening to the audiobook and getting a different experience. So I'm probably also going to listen to the audiobook. It comes out, I believe, Saturday is when the audiobook drops. Is that right?
Well, they're telling me. It was delayed. I don't know why, but I believe Saturday, the 15th, it should be out.
Well, you know, there's the mixing, the mastering, whatever. It's your voice. Oh, that's great. That's good. It's always a little off-putting when there's like, you know, the author isn't the one reading it, and you have to like get used to this other guy's voice. So that's definitely a good addition. JustinRobertsBook.com.
It would have been better if Betty White did it or James Earl Jones.
Oh, if James Earl Jones narrated your book, I think, yeah, you might win a Grammy for that one, actually. You know, him describing everything. So, but JustinRobertsBook.com. And you know what? One more thing. Do you have any good Booker T stories for me?
Booker T was the guest referee. I mean, I have a lot of Booker T stories because he's such a good guy. He was the referee on this Abu Dhabi tour that we did, and it was towards the end of my run. And every night he would, his facials and just, I think he even got on the mic, like, everything he did was so funny in the ring. And the referee, because you're just conditioned to the referees and how good they are and how quick they are. And like Booker doing it, it's just so funny because it's Booker reffing, so it's not like the regular referee. And he was having so much fun with it. Everything he did was funny. I couldn't stop laughing. So it's hard to relay it, but the gist of the story is Booker was one of my favorite guest referees in Abu Dhabi.
Well, there you go. There you go. That's a very interesting story, and I can picture it now. But JustinRobertsBook.com is the place to get it, at Justin Roberts on social media, on Twitter and all that. Can't recommend the book enough. Best, see it in the house. Get it now. Amazon, wherever books are sold. Hey, no problem, Justin. Thank you for taking the time. Hey, Justin, thank you so much. All right, guys, that's the show this week. On the podcast, I want to give a shout-out to SC Scoops and Title Match Wrestling one more time. We're going to be back next week breaking down what happened at WrestleMania, why it happened, and where is it going. Stay tuned. I am Brad Gilmore. Follow me on Twitter, at Brad Gilmore. I'm going to tweet out that WrestleMania prop bet sheet. Fill it out. Tweet me questions. All that great stuff. We will see you next week here on the show.